I think in terms of a good message, I think simplicity is key. I think if you can outline a problem and then deliver a clear solution, you're on to a winner. I think there is a temptation sometimes to complicate it with lots of nuances, and it might be that those nuances exist, but it can make it harder to land the message that you're trying to convey.
Welcome to Communicating Purpose. I'm John Higginson, and I believe that the best way to get a message across clearly is by talking about something you honestly and passionately believe in. By doing so, you bring people with you. Your passion becomes theirs, and I call this the power of purpose. Now, last year, I changed cars and made sure that as I did so, I had one that had the ability to charge with electric for city use. So I'm really pleased to be joined this week by Tariq Arafa, PR and Communications Manager at Connected Curb. Connected Curb is an electric vehicle charging company that works with local authorities, private companies, and commercial and residential developers to provide electric charging points on streets, in car parks, and in residential blocks. Tariq is responsible for highlighting the work that Connected Curb do to establish them as a leader within the industry. Before joining Connected Curb, Tariq worked in digital communications at Drax and in marketing at Unilever and at a teaching union. Tariq, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So just tell me a bit more about Connected Curb.
Sure. So Connected Curb, as you say, are an electric vehicle charging infrastructure solutions provider. Our goal is really to bring sustainable mobility to everyone. And by that, we mean we believe that EV charging shouldn't be just the preserve of the wealthy. We really want to avoid a two-tier adoption of electric vehicles. We work with local authorities to provide EV charging infrastructure on street residential settings as well as public car parks, because over 50% of UK residents are actually unable to charge at home, either because they don't have a driveway or they just don't have off street parking. So providing them with reliable, affordable, and convenient charging infrastructure, we feel is the only way to enable a full switch to electric. We also work with workplaces, commercial and residential developers to support them on their EV journey, and we focus on putting EV chargers in long dwell locations. That's where people park for long periods of time, such as at home overnight on their street or at their workplace. We believe that by offering charging that integrates with the so-called routines and rhythms of everyday life, we can offer that convenience that people really crave.
Great, yeah. And we've got two street parking chargers on the street that I'm on, actually. My car is currently charging on it outside. And there's a big kind of queue. You know, you do have to find that spot because there's more and more people moving to electric or hybrid vehicles. Do you find that there's a really, really strong demand now?
Oh yeah, definitely demand is increasing. We do, our infrastructure is prepared for the fact that, you know, even once we put chargers in the ground, there will be a sort of initial low utilization because you can't use the chargers until you actually buy an EV. Our infrastructure is designed so we can align provision with demand. So we stick the infrastructure in the ground, the expensive componentry, so that it can lie dormant until the demand rises, and then we put the above the ground infrastructure in a later point. So, definitely there is increasing demand. We're getting more and more inquiries from different organisations who want to equip themselves with EV facilities.
That's interesting, because as you buy a new car, and it is such a big purchase, isn't it, a car, you know, second only to the home, I think, in terms of the amount of money you're going to spend. And, you know, once you buy a new car, and we bought a new one for the first time in kind of 12 years, we don't use cars very much. We're in London. Most of the week it is sitting there. It's kind of weekend use with children. And you suddenly get more and more into it, and if you're making that switch, you really do look into, how am I going to do this? What's the infrastructure going to be? So are you putting in infrastructure that's not working so that people in that local area can see it and see, okay, there's a point there that I could potentially use, so that you're creating that demand? Is that what you're doing?
No, I mean, the infrastructure we put in underground, it won't actually be visible. So we're trying to avoid having lots of unused charging points. It will just be there so that we don't have to dig up the ground multiple times. So we put everything in all at once. So you can put in, for example, in Cambridge Science Park, we put in a number of underground and what we call enabling infrastructure, and then when the demand rises and there's a real need for it, and we know that it's going to be used, we can just install the above the ground socket, and it can be activated within 45 minutes. So yeah, it's the advantages of doing that are that we don't have to dig up the ground multiple times. It can be, you know, we can fix any problem. The modular design of the infrastructure means that, you know, if something needs repairing or upgrading, only the part that needs to be replaced needs replacing, rather than the whole unit. And yeah, we're aligning provision with demand, so we don't get lots of unused charging points when, you know, the utilization is initially at a low point.
Great. So just tell me a bit about yourself as a purpose-led communicator. I know that you're in your private life, you're a bit of an environmentalist yourself as well. How did you come in your own career to the place that you're at today?
Sure. Well, I think throughout my career, my roles have shown that I really have a passion for organizations that make a difference, whether it be in the field of sustainability or social value. I started working at a teachers trade union, NSUWT, trying to advance the cause of trade unions, whether that be in the UK or abroad. You know, teachers have a really important part to play in the fabric of society, and they have a really, really tough job. And that's something that I enjoyed for 10 years, trying to support them in everything that they did. We ran a number of campaigns to try and improve teachers' pay and conditions. We used to run conferences and events supporting underrepresented teachers within the teaching profession. So that was something that gave me a lot of satisfaction. I moved my career in a slightly different direction after studying an MBA at Warwick Business School. I moved to Drax Group, which is one of the largest single site producers of renewable energy. I helped them tell their story about their carbon capture projects, about their move from coal to generate electricity over to biomass, helping them tell their net zero story. Then I moved to Connected Curb, which provided a lot of joy for me in terms of my passion for smart technology. My house is a walking advert for Alexa and smart technology. They're very much of a similar mindset in trying to use technology you know, power the smart cities of tomorrow. So, you know, our charging points, they're not just charging points. They can support future technologies such as 5G and IoT and air quality sensors. And, you know, we're doing a lot of work to try and level up EV charging, you know, making EV charging accessible to everyone, not just the middle classes, so to speak, but to make it, you know, available for everybody.
Great. And let's just go back to Drax, because I think that's a really good example of an organization which really shows that purpose isn't always black and white. There's an organisation that actually over the years has been heavily criticised at times, and you pointed out it's made that move from coal, one of the most polluting power sources, to biomass. And you were there on that journey, weren't you, as it kind of moved from being highly criticised by the environmental movement, but while you knew this very strong, important role it could play in reducing climate change. Can you just tell me a bit more about that?
Sure. So when it made the move to from coal to biomass, there are a lot of skeptics, as there often are, about you know, the way that trees were being removed over in America and Canada, but clearly there was an educational job to be carried out, and that's something that I was heavily involved in terms of telling the story around the move to biomass. So you know, the fact that it's the thinnings that are used, we're not cutting down trees that are just being wasted. We're actually planting millions and hundreds of millions of trees over the last few years to try and replace the carbon, and yeah, it's just an educational story in terms of telling in terms of convincing people that, you know, our the wagons that are used to bring trees over from the States are actually specially designed, and that everything is geared towards you know, trying to reduce carbon output and yeah, make our whole supply chain sustainable. I was involved in producing a virtual reality journey of our supply chain, which was used to tell the story, and I think yeah, did so successfully.
Great. Well, that segues us on really well to storytelling. What's something that you're most proud of in your communications career?
I think certainly at Connected Curb, the work that we've done to communicate the social value of what we do has been trailblazing. We're aiming, as I said, we're aiming to make EV charging more affordable, not just to preserve of the wealthy. We want it to be in rural areas, not just urban ones. We want the UK's 2.3 million blue badge drivers to enjoy hassle-free charging. So we've really been telling those stories and showing that electric vehicles are something that everyone can enjoy. And that's given me a lot of satisfaction. We're not just about getting more charging points in the ground. That is, although that's a clear aim, we want to make sure that nobody lives, no UK resident lives further than 5-minute walk from a charger. But it's really just telling that story and demystifying electric vehicles. There's clearly a long way to go, but I think what we've achieved so far as a company in terms of growing our network and telling that story and reaching out to people that may not have considered themselves as an EV driver is something that I'm proud of, and I know that a lot of people at Connected Curb are very proud of.
And I think sometimes when I speak to people and they don't understand PR, they think it's smoke and mirrors, and they think it's about hiding things and making up things. I think at its best, PR is really about clarifying things and showing clear pictures and actually showing exactly what someone does. And actually, the kind of PR that maybe gets PR a bad press is those kind of bad actors that are out there that are actually using it through nefarious means and actually lying. And all of those ones should be called out. For you, what makes a really good message?
I think in terms of a good message, I think simplicity is key. I think if you can outline a problem and then deliver a clear solution, you're on to a winner. I think there is a temptation sometimes to complicate it with lots of nuances, and it might be that those nuances exist, but it can make it harder to land the message that you're trying to convey. But I think the other thing is just being able to back up what you're saying with facts. So if you can show evidence of how you're actually living the message you're trying to convey, how you're living and breathing it, practicing what you preach. It has to resonate with the audience. So making sure you're clear about what the audience's wants and needs are is critical. And that might not be might not always be easy. We always sometimes have an idea of what audiences want and need based on our own experiences. But I think doing that research, having that real-time data to try and understand what audiences need allows you to tailor your message and get the message bang on.
Have there been any moments in your career that you've thought you could have done better or you've failed badly?
Yeah, I think it's several points in my career, and I think we're probably all guilty of it at some point, is just getting wrapped up in, as I say, in what we believe our audiences want to hear. I think we may know, but you really have to sort of try and dig down, use real-time data, use surveys, use research to try and find out what they want. Otherwise, you know, it can turn out to be something else that they actually want. For example, I've worked at an education union where you think that teachers might be interested in your appearance at a select committee, which we obviously know is very important, and they often are interested in that, but they probably be more interested in teaching resources that they can use in their classroom on a daily basis. It's kind of being able to, sometimes we can get so close to what we're doing, you need to take a step back and actually look at the wider picture and think, put yourself in, you know, other people's shoes that aren't so closely connected to the organization, or put ourselves in our audience's shoes, which takes you have to be quite conscious of doing that. We can all think that we're doing it, but sometimes we just have to try a bit harder to do that.
Yeah. Well, look, you've talked about politics there, and I don't need too many excuses to get back to talking about politics as a former political editor, and as you know, also run Higginson Strategy is a lobbying firm as well as a PR outfit. So last year, the government went back on its decision to, what was then Prime Minister Boris Johnson's decision to bring forward the date at which electric vehicles, or you wouldn't be allowed to buy non-electric vehicles, which was meant to be 2030. And that's now been pushed back by the present Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, to 2035. I know that had a big negative effect on lots of environmental businesses, and I'm sure Connected Curb as well. It's one that all of us that are passionate about the environment were sad about. It felt like a pushback, and we've also seen recent pushbacks from Labour as well, as if there's a kind of race to the bottom there. But what effect did it have on Connected Curb, and how did that affect your communications job?
Sure. So I think for Connected Curb, I mean, clearly it was a bit of a shock that it happened. You do hear rumours of things happening, but when it happened, it wasn't ideal. But in terms of our rollout strategy, our rollout programme, it hasn't really changed much. The zero emissions vehicle mandate, which stipulates that that car makers have to sell a certain number of EVs, that has remained in force. So certain things haven't really changed. I think the main change has been to public perception. I think that's where what could be damaged the most. And I think that changing the public perception of electric vehicles remains the biggest challenge in our industry. And clearly, the moving of 2030 date was a setback. But I think we are getting there. Changing long held habits and belief systems is never easy, but we don't think it's impossible. We're putting together several tools right now. We'll soon be releasing a toolkit to counter some of the negativity that there's been in the mainstream media over electric vehicles. We hold webinars for various interest groups, and at Connected Curb, we've got a comprehensive community engagement program where we engage with residents, where we're deploying chargers to try and cover off that education piece. So Yeah, overall, it's not changed too much, but it has maybe affected, you know, the ability with which we can connect to the public, and that's something that's hard enough already. So we're continuing to try and win hearts and minds as we move forward.
And so what are some of those public criticisms that you're getting that you think are wrong or changing?
Well, clearly, some of the big concerns are around the initial cost of a vehicle, of an EV vehicle. That has been a prohibitive factor. And that is something that probably one of the things that bothers people the most when they're thinking about converting to EV. What we do say is that the cost of vehicles is coming down gradually. It's as the secondhand market starts to mature, we're hoping that will come down further. And clearly infrastructure is going to be an issue. And that's something that we're trying to remedy. We're not trying to get too hung up on numbers. We're trying to make sure that the charges are actually in the right place. So we've got a site selection tool that's powered by artificial intelligence that we hope is going to be a real game changer in the industry in terms of selecting optimal locations based on existing street furniture, EV ownership levels, local parking restrictions, socioeconomic factors. These are all things that we think that we can really make a difference in terms of taking the labour out of and the effort out of councils choosing sites, which is one of the key aspects of the process.
Where are some of the top areas for EVs at the moment? Are they where people would expect, cities?
Yeah, I mean, up until recently, I mean, 30% of the charging network was in London, and that's something that we're really trying to change. I mean, we're targeting, we're trying to deploy more in rural areas because that can be their areas where the grid capacity can be more stretched, there can be lower footfall, and you have charging black spots. We've got a project with Kent where we're putting hundreds of charging points across rural countryside. In Coventry, we've got a magnificent project where we've installed over 800 charging points across Coventry. EVs generally are concentrated. Ownership is concentrated in the cities, but I think there's more and more incentives now. There's more and more. I think attitudes are changing. It's not just a young person's game either, I should add. We've got projects with retirement homes where we're putting in charging points in retirement homes, and there is an appetite even amongst the older parts of the population to actually try out EVs.
Great. Tell us about what you personally, have you got any recommendations, what you read, what you listen to, any podcasts, any books that you would recommend?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I in terms of podcasts, I mean, I do listen to the EV Musings podcast. That's a really great one for EVs. I get a lot of my my news from mainstream websites such as the BBC, and certainly X and Facebook are big sources of news for me. I do try and have a diverse consumption, so I do check out the tabloids and broadsheets from time to time. In terms of technology, I always keep up to date with techradar.com. That's a great site for new technological innovations. We also try and make our own news as well. So we're trying to become more of a breaking news service ourselves as Connected Curb to try and, lead the industry in terms of what's going on, provide updates to people, and to try and sort of develop our own sense of editorial values to try and break news to the audiences that we connect with.
Tariq Arafa, PR and Communications Manager at Connected Curb. Thank you very much for speaking to me, John Higginson, on Communicating Purpose. produced this week by Catherine Kitchen. If you'd like to know more about how Higginson's strategy supports purpose-led organisations, go to higginsonstrategy.com.